very pleased to see recently the U.S. Supreme Court rejected the suit brought by Michael Newdow, who's a man from Sacramento, who's complained about the presence of religious models like In God We Trust on our coinage and paper money and on our public buildings. His claim, and you see it a lot in the last 30 or 40 years, that somehow the presence of these religious symbols in the public forum involve a violation of the First Amendment. And the First Amendment, which clearly said there should be no official establishment of religion in America, nor should the government restrict the free exercise of religion. The tired argument is that somehow even mentioning God in the public square or bringing religious symbols forward is a violation of this. And, of course, it's ridiculous because the Founding Fathers knew very well what was involved in the establishment of an official religion. They knew about it from their English background, and they saw the previous couple centuries how terrible that was. They by no means, though, implied that somehow the eradication of religious language completely from the public square was an implication of this prohibition. And so I was pleased to see the U.S. Supreme Court gave very little time and attention to the complaint. See, I'm going to argue that, in fact, the aggressive eradication of religion from the public square is a very dire situation for our democracy. And though that's counterintuitive, I'm going to argue it. To see it, we have to go back to that stuffy and humid summer of 1776, as a young Virginia lawyer is laboring over the opening lines of a rather important document. I'm talking, of course, about Thomas Jefferson and the Declaration of Independence. Putting the case for independence in the widest possible framework, Jefferson says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights." If you consult the history of political philosophy, let's say the classical thinkers, Plato, Aristotle, Cicero, and their colleagues, it would have struck them as the opposite of self-evident that all men are equal. They would have noticed enormous inequalities in intelligence, in courage, in virtue, in beauty, etc. And in fact, the recognition of these radical inequalities would become the foundation for a properly functioning political order. To tell Plato or Aristotle or Cicero that all people are equal and that the recognition of that equality is the foundation of a political order would have struck them as counterintuitive in the extreme. In fact, the just social order in Plato and Aristotle is founded upon a keen sense of radical inequality. Okay, so to me, simply as a political philosopher, the very interesting question is, how do we get from self-evidently false to self-evidently true? Why could someone as brilliant as Thomas Jefferson say in the 18th century, it's self-evidently the case that all people are equal? Well, the clue, the answer is, in that little word that we kind of rush past without noticing, all men are created equal, Jefferson says, and that's the hinge. He knew as well as Plato and Aristotle that we are radically different in intelligence and beauty and virtue and all the other things. But he got from his Christian inheritance the view that we are all equally children of God. Take God out of the calculus, I would argue, and equality rather quickly disappears. What we're left with is the radical inequality that was recognized by the classical political philosophers. Here's the second thing. All men are created equal, and they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Again, go back to the classical political world. That all people have rights that are inherent in them, that can't be denied or taken away, would have struck Plato, Aristotle, or Cicero as counterintuitive in the extreme. Certain privileged people, certain people who had inherited the privilege from their aristocratic forebears, might be described as having rights and prerogatives and privileges. The vast majority of people, though, in ancient society were recognized as not being the subject of rights. Think of the prevalence simply of slavery in the classical world, and you see that. Again, what makes the difference? How do we go from, it's self-evident that people don't have rights, to Jefferson's claim that it's self-evident that they do. Again, it's the religious language. They are endowed by their creator. Because all people have been created by God, they've been loved into being and destined for eternal life. Because of that, we recognize that they have inalienable rights and dignity. That means rights that can be neither granted by nor rescinded by any human institution or human contrivance. That's what Jefferson's seeing, and I'm arguing the only rational foundation for that is the theological claim that they have been endowed by their creator with those rights. Now, watch something. And all you got to do to see this is look at the history of the 20th century. When the creator God is explicitly denied, what follows in very short order is the denial of these inalienable rights. Look at Hitler's Germany. Look at Stalin's Russia. Look at Mao's China. Look at Pol Pot's Cambodia. Look at Castro's Cuba. What do you see? You see a systematic denial of these human rights. Rights become anything but inalienable. They are granted by, guaranteed by the government to those whom the government favors, right? Take God out of the calculus, and once again, human rights quickly fall to the side. See, and this is why, for me, this is not just a question of, superficial, pious boilerplate. Isn't it nice having "In God We Trust" on our dollar bills to make us feel pious? It's much deeper than that. It's much more important than that. To say "In God We Trust" is to provide a democracy with its proper ground. See, a democracy involves, appropriately, the election of officials, the debating and deliberation about our political strategies. It involves the free press. It involves the rule of law. But all those things, legitimately constitutive of democracy, are grounded in certain moral absolutes that are not themselves the object of deliberation and debate. That all people are equal, that they are endowed with certain inalienable rights. We're not going to deliberate about that. We're not going to debate about that. Those are grounded in these properly theological intuitions. That's why it matters to say, "In God we trust." And this is why, as a devotee of both Thomas Aquinas and Thomas Jefferson, I say bravo to the U.S. Supreme Court.